Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. On today's episode, I'm very happy My name's Marcus Marrett, and today I'm very happy to be speaking to Phil Delves, man behind the Football Shirt Collective and the YouTube channel Phil's Corner. Phil, nice to speak to you today.
Great to speak to you, Marcus. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Ah, pleasure. So, Phil, can you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what it is that you do?
Yeah, so my name's Phil, and I have the privilege in many ways of talking about football shirts for a living. So I write blogs, I create videos, and basically any content related to football shirts that I can find or think of, I'm involved in. So it's a really fun job. I'm doing it on a freelance basis, and since about March this year, I've been working freelance, but doing most of my work for Football Shirt Collective, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a minute. So that's my job. I get paid to talk about shirts.
Oh, lucky man. So how do you, how did you get to this point? Can you give us a wee insight to your background?
Yeah, it's certainly not a linear journey, really. And it's quite funny because I sort of went various directions before landing here. So to try and not take too much time, I actually went to uni to study music technology. So I was a musician.
Okay.
With kind of vague ambitions of going down the kind of like the production route or maybe composing for TV and film, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But in many ways, really, my music background anyway was never kind of, I was never classically trained or anything. I basically sort of just enjoy music and enjoy kind of making music on the computer. I wasn't sort of a classic musician in that sense. And anyway, at uni, just during my course, I kind of found myself enjoying it, but not quite kind of, I guess, sinking myself into that world as much as a lot of my peers. But I did a really formative placement year. And during that year, I worked at a creative marketing agency. And that was a really interesting time. I got exposed to lots of different areas, things like a bit of graphic design, social media, video editing, and it was just quite a good year to sort of pick up all these different skills. So anyway, after uni, I kind of knew I didn't really want to go down the music route, but then I thought, oh, you know, let's maybe go into marketing a bit. There was a few more jobs there, so I started off at it was actually a health and safety software company of all things.
Okay, right.
So again, nothing to do with shirts, but I just did a bit of marketing there. And once I was there and there a couple of years, I thought, okay, let's look for something in an industry I'm more interested in. And it was during those couple of years at this health and safety company that started collecting shirts. So it was only kind of, you know, when would this have been? 4 or 5 years ago. So not that long ago. I'd just been, you know, on eBay, and I'm sure like many people listening, I was just amazed at what you could get, you know, on eBay.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. And I'd always had a bit of an interest. Again, I'm sure we'll talk about that more. But anyway, a colleague of mine just saw a job advertised at a place called footy.com. And footy.com are basically like a price comparison site for shirts and boots. So anyway, I thought, yeah, let's go for it. And again, that was really good. And in those 2 years at Footy, a lot really kind of accelerated. I started doing a lot more on Twitter and kind of thinking about, I guess, growing my personal brand, but also, you know, obviously with the work I was doing with Footy, kind of growing that. And yeah, at the start of this year, I decided to go freelance and basically just take all I'd learned from that time at Footy and applying that to a few different areas. So yeah, it's been not a linear journey. As I say, I certainly didn't envisage being in this position even a couple of years ago. So it's been really fun.
And so those 4 or 5 years ago when you started picking up shirts and developing a collection from eBay, I'm assuming that there was an interest and a love in football shirts from your history and from growing up. So was that always there, and it was just something that you then started to develop?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. It was one of those things, I think, like a lot of people, when I suddenly had a bit of disposable income post-uni. I mean, certainly had a bit of uni as well, but, you know, once you sort of paid off a few debts and things, yeah, started getting a wage. And it was, like you say, that love for shirts was very much from an early age. And for me, my relationship with the game has always been quite a visual one, quite a kind of aesthetic one. You know, I think... Uh-huh. So I'm not someone who particularly plays a lot. You know, I played a bit, but I was never that good at playing. So I always sort of, that side of it wasn't so much for me. And I've also always had a real sort of enjoyment for the kind of the global side of the game as well. So I'm myself, my dad's from New Zealand, my mum's from Malaysia. So I've got quite an interesting kind of heritage there. And I think linked to that, really, I've always sort of loved, you know, the sort of more exotic league, so to speak. And you know, if I was playing FIFA or Football Manager or whatever, I'd always kind of gravitate to the kind of the weird and wonderful teams in world football.
Yeah.
And of course, the kits so often are kind of identifiers for those teams. You know, if I was to talk about Grêmio in Brazil, the kit is probably the first thing you think of, that colour scheme, those stripes. So I think probably subconsciously, I'd always have that connection. And then in terms of the shirts as well, again, that was always something, again, probably without realizing at the time, I'd you know, be really interested in when a sponsor would change. And again, I didn't realize it when I was growing up particularly, but actually looking back, I'd always had an interest. So yeah, I think when it came, like you say, to kind of starting the collection, it was really fun, because it felt like I was very much kind of, I guess, living out that passion in a different way, you know, in a new way, by actually collecting the shirts. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And how big is your collection right now? Or is that a difficult question to answer?
yeah, I think it's the latter. It's definitely, I mean, so when I started collecting, I used to kind of, I was really studious. I had a spreadsheet, I'd list, you know, where I bought it from, the price, etc. But honestly, that didn't last very long. when it picked up, I kind of quickly realized, obviously, that is good practice. But because for me, and I guess I'm not like all collectors, I quite like the idea of sort of collecting and then moving shirts on after so often. You know, if they don't stick. And so I mean, over the years, I'm sure I've probably bought and sold over 1,000 shirts, but currently it's something between 100 and 150, so it's, you know, relatively smaller. But yeah, I've been very keen, and to be honest, even when I've been doing that, I've not been necessarily doing it kind of for maximum profit. I'm not someone who kind of, you know, snipes deals off eBay just to sell. You know, I do try to buy stuff I would potentially keep, but it's a lot, but certainly not as many as some out there.
And have you got any tips for storage? How do you keep your kits?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We've just actually recently written a piece on Football Shirt Collective, which is all about that, actually, about storing shirts. And yeah, for me, it's changed over the years. I sort of started out, I think, as many people do, just kind of a classic freestanding hanger from IKEA. And to be fair, that served me very well. And now it's kind of split between... There's a few in the wardrobe, and, you know, if it's a shirt I've recently purchased, or I'm sort of the shirts that I might wear occasionally, they're on the hanger in the wardrobe. But then the rest of it is kind of a combination of plastic zippable wallets inside a steel box, or just a box. So those wallets, I just saw someone on Twitter actually who'd done that, and they're like, I think they're A3 size, just like the kind of... I can't even think what the brand is particularly, but just some from Amazon. And
sorry to jump in. They almost look like, if I remember correctly, I don't have many comics anymore, but the ones that I do have, I have in the plastic see-through kind of wallet sleeves.
Yes. And,
if I am thinking of the same thing? Do they kind of function in it and look in a similar way to those?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And they also remind me, I'm sure at school at some point they were knocking about as well. Yeah. So they're kind of, just one of those things that actually translated quite well to folding the shirt in. Yeah.
Well, if there's, and I'm sure there will be listeners out there who want to read that blog to find out how best to storage their kits and to find out everything else that you're involved in, can you let people know where they can find you online?
Yeah, so probably the best way would be on Twitter. I'm on there most days, and certainly the bulk of what I do comes through my Twitter, and that's just my name, Phil Delves. And yeah, if you go on there, you'll see as well, I think in my bio, there should be the handle for Football Shirt Collective. And again, that's the site where most of the stuff I do is there. Yeah. So, and then from there, I mean, and also the website is footballshirtcollective.com. And yeah, there's me and a few other writers who just really the focus of our content there is very much around collectors. So you'll see stuff about collecting as well as the kind of classic sort of shirt related stuff there as well.
And can you tell us all about Phil's Corner?
Mm. Yeah, that was, well, it's been really, really fun to get that going. So really, ever since I started collecting shirts those years ago, I sort of had the idea of, I mean, at the time I was sort of thinking, oh, I'm almost sort of documenting my collection or just some sort of vague video-related idea. For me personally, I think as well, just to kind of, I guess, as a bit of a creative outlet, to kind of get experience a bit more with video editing and things like that. And yeah, anyway, when I sort of was thinking about going freelance at the start of this year, I kind of thought, actually, yeah, let's just go for it. Let's start a channel with kind of not really any expectations necessarily, just to sort of see what the market was, see what was there. And it's been a lot of fun since I started, and it's been kind of, I very much kind of run it alongside my other work, so it's not been my kind of full-time endeavor, and in many ways it's still in the very early stages, but it's been great. The support has been really encouraging. I think there's 1500 subscribers now, which is really great, and really, you know, I was hoping maybe 1,000 would have been good at this point, so to get, you know, more than that is really encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely, good for you,
because I've only done about a dozen videos, I think, so it's early days, but yeah, it's been really fun. And if you find that at Phil's Corner, I think again the link is on my Twitter bio.
Yes,
you'll see lots of different stuff, lots of different topics around shirts, so it's been really cool.
And the first episode was the 6 best Fiorentina kits. Can you tell us why the first episode was based on Fiorentina? Why start there?
Oh yeah, good question. I mean, so it's funny because going back to what we were saying earlier, I've sort of got a love and appreciation for a number of teams around world football, and I think like many shirt fans or football fans in general, Italian football and Serie A has always been a big place to draw from in terms of inspiration and creativity. And so Fiorentina, kind of, I guess I'd almost group them as one of a few teams really that I admire. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself a supporter of Fiorentina, but definitely an admirer of them. And of course, not least for the kits and. Like in the video, but you know, talking about just I guess that theme that runs through of the purple, but just the way that's been used, and obviously not just the color scheme, but the various players and sponsors that have been there, and one of my favorite early purchases for the collection was the Fiorentina kit, and the one that I show in the video where. It's got a massive 7-Up sponsor. It's very early Battistuta, but it is, you know, early Battistuta era, kind of early 90s. And I think for me, actually, as I say, even though I wouldn't kind of call myself a supporter of Fiorentina, if I had to pick one team to kind of, I guess, pick as my favourite for shirts, it probably would be Fiorentina. I think it would be close between a few teams, but I think it would be them. So yeah, they were the first one.
Which other teams would be in that mix?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so another team which I always refer to and I love is Dortmund. And when I think of Dortmund, I particularly think of 90s Borussia Dortmund. And I think many people will be aware, but for those that aren't, Nike worked with Dortmund in the 90s. And they were one of the first teams to really kind of have an extended run with Nike alongside PSG. And of course, then later in the 90s, you had Arsenal and other teams. But Dortmund are one of the kind of the early teams. But Nike, they weren't really main kind of players in the kit scene until the 90s. And with Dortmund, there's a really fascinating kind of progression of kits. And you'll notice it pretty much as soon as Nike take over Dortmund in the 90s. And some of the designs, they're really interesting. There's a guy called Drake Ramberg, who some people may have heard of, who was one of the chief designers at Nike. And he was very much a pioneer in the space of using kind of computer-created designs, so manipulating graphics that would then be used on the shirt. And it was just a really, I mean, from an aesthetic point of view, it's fascinating to say. Quite a lot of the kits, they're quite kind of glitchy, quite, you know, not necessarily particularly refined designs, but I have a lot of love for them. And there's other key features like the luminous yellow color, which was used. And from what I gather, that wasn't particularly popular with the fans at the time.
Oh, really?
It was quite a part. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, so for me, when I look back at it, I think, oh, it looks amazing. But I guess it was that departure from the traditional yellow. It was, you know, a lot more kind of like a luminous shade. But I just love that. And I think, yeah, so between Fiorentina and Dortmund, I mean, there's other teams as well. Again, Serie A related, Napoli, probably another go-to for me. And I find their kits really, really quite interesting. And then if you look around world football again, I mentioned Gremio, you know, teams like that, where they just have such a distinctive colour scheme. And but yeah, I think if I had to pick two, we'll go between Fiorentina and Dortmund, I think.
Interesting. And there are two Dortmund kits from the 90s that are high up on my dream hit list. It was nice. When the club was sponsored by, I'm sure both of the shirts that I'm referencing were sponsored by S. Oliver in that beautiful kind of big script type.
Yeah.
Both Nike kits. One of them, it was actually, and I love it because it's such a beautiful example of like a kind of classic clean shirt with a collar. It was a yellow and white striped Dortmund kit made by Nike. And there was also another one that, I think that one came first. And then after that, it was again sponsored by S. Oliver, a yellow shirt, but it had white panels on the side.
Yes.
Again, sponsored by S. Oliver. And both of those are on my dream kit list. Absolutely.
Nice. No, that's a good call. I think both of those kits, if I'm remembering them correctly, yeah, they'd be a good addition to any collection.
And I think the Dortmund kit this year is a really good example of a sponsor fitting with a kit design. We've had the Evonik sponsor with Dortmund over a number of years, and the new one-on-one sponsor that seems to fit so well with the kind of black rip and effect in the new Dortmund kit. And it is often something that I've heard people say how kits would be better without sponsors, but I don't know about yourself, but I often think that sponsors can help complete a kit. A kit can look as missing something without a sponsor, as a sponsor can help detract from a kit design.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a man after my own heart, Marcus. Absolutely.
Oh, really?
It's funny because when was it? Was it last year when Huddersfield did the Paddy Power stunt and kind of following that? Yeah. And of course, the campaign and there's a few other teams as well involved. It was all about saving shirts from sponsorship. But I was one of, and I think a few other people as well, one of the people kind of saying, actually, the opposite. You know, Yes, there are issues around sponsorship, and you could look to things like gambling companies kind of, in many ways, foothold over a lot of the game at the moment. And that's an issue that needs to be addressed. And also from an aesthetic point of view, sponsors often do detract. But at the same time, I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, you lose so much character, I think, when you remove sponsors. I think a lot of designs actually as well, even if the sponsor doesn't necessarily fit with the design, I think it still gives it another kind of, again, another identifier, another marker that then when you look, you know, if you were to talk about the team or the kits, you know, 10 years later, you probably would use the sponsor a lot of the time as a reference point. So I think it's helpful in that sense. And yeah, I just think, yeah, a lot of people kind of say, oh, but yeah, there's a lot of kind of, I don't know, yeah, these sort of anonymous gambling companies and things sponsoring teams. But I think that's kind of a problem, but you're not really solving it by removing sponsors. I think really the ideal, I guess, is to kind of have a much more diverse pool of sponsors. I think if we saw that, actually, a lot of people would come around and realise that they do add a lot in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the sponsorship space can be used for a social message or for a positive message. This season, Hibs have an NHS message on their kit. And I remember Aston Villa, actually it was on a really nice Aston Villa Nike kit from the mid-noughties. I think it was Acorns. And I have a real fondness for Villa because nice. Based mainly on the colour palette. And so nice. The sponsorship area can be used in a positive way. It doesn't have to be seen as a kind of eye blocker, you know. As a United fan, it's probably only this season's third kit that I absolutely love, that I'm so happy to be able to look at a United shirt and just not instantly be just detracted by the Chevrolet logo. But that's just because you've got a logo with this kind of gradient lighting effect that just for me just always happens to jar else I'm looking at. But again, that can be a pure objective decision. And so looking at current kit trends, what do you see as being prevalent in the kit design industry of this season? I see Nike with third kits, and you know, not just Nike, but third kits really seem to be a platform for creativity and maybe pulling out a club's brand or doing something very interesting.
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a real kind of increase this year in what I'd sort of categorize as disruptive designs. Really, you can trace that back to kind of 2018 and the Nigeria kit. And when I say the Nigeria kit, I think everyone will know, you know, what I'm referring to. That very, I mean, really, it was a landmark kit. It was a kit which was so popular that it reached mainstream news. And I think for a lot of people, it kind of, I guess, opened people's eyes to, the popularity that could be achieved with a kit. So I think what certainly from my perspective, what we're seeing now is a kind of, I guess, the knock-on effect or the kind of the ripple effect of that and a lot of brands. And of course, this isn't particularly new. You know, we've seen it before in kits, but I think what, as opposed to kind of pre-2018 when retro-inspired kits were predominantly the name of the game, and if you look at the World Cup kits, for example, of course, Adidas particularly had a lot of designs referencing old kits. And that still happens now, but really we've sort of, I would say, shifted quite quickly into a space where, you mentioned third kits there. If you were to look at the third kits across all the major teams in England, for example, they're all over the place. There's very little that's grounded in kind of obvious things like previous colour palettes, things like that. You mentioned United. That's a great example of a design which, although they certainly, you know, mentioned about referencing some of the old stripe kits from their history, but there was still, it's relatively new, it's relatively different. And yeah, I think, so anyway, I think it feels very much like now kits Whereas before, I think most people in the last 5-10 years would kind of expect maybe some third kits to be a bit out there. But now even home kits are going down that route. So you mentioned Dorman. That's a great example of a home kit that is so different to previous home kits. I think now, you could almost say that no shirt is kind of safe, if you like, from being played with in that sense. So I think home, away, all third kits for a lot of teams now are looking quite different, quite bold in terms of the departure from traditional kits. So I'd say generally speaking in the space, that's definitely something which is happening, and it's certainly not just one brand. I think almost every brand now are going down that route. And I think there's good and bad to that. I think, you know, on the one side, for someone like me who is really interested in the design side of things, and I wouldn't call myself a purist particularly or a traditionalist, you know, I quite like the more interesting kits. So for me, I think there's a lot to be excited about, but then understandably a lot of fans are sometimes, and I see it a lot, you know, they kind of question a lot of the decisions. And I think I do think it can go too far sometimes, and you know, I'm sort of a little bit worried when I see things like, for example, I think it was last year, there was a game where PSG were playing Real Madrid, and PSG wore a white kit at home and Real wore a blue kit. And obviously they kind of had the flipped colours, and it kind of, and it, you know, fair, obviously there's marketing reasons for that, but it was kind of funny thinking, you know, actually in 10 years time, are we going to see instances of this where you associate, you know, again, Real with white, but if they're, you know, not wearing those colours when they can, and they're choosing to wear their away or third kits in situations where they could wear their home kit, are you diluting a lot of those really kind of iconic identities? And, you know, that's another subject in itself. But yeah, so I think broadly speaking, we're very much moving very quickly from traditional kit approaches. There's good and bad to that, but I think there's a lot to be positive about. And I think, again, we could talk about how now kits, broadly speaking, there's a lot more bespoke kits than there were a few years ago and things like that. So I'm positive overall, but a lot is changing very quickly.
And when you say bespoke kits, is that a move from what many people saw as templated kits or kits, even from the very most high profile clubs that you could see how Nike or Adidas or whichever manufacturer had applied one of their templates to a kit design, and so you can understand how fans can maybe feel that our club's identity has been put aside here, and the kit's being based on a manufacturer's template rather than heroing the club itself.
Yeah, I think. So there's a few things, really. I think one of the things which a lot of people are sometimes surprised to hear is that, you know, templates have been quite a key part of the shirt industry for a long time. And many people actually, you know, if you were to talk about the greatest kits of all time, you might think of kits like Holland's kit in 88. That was actually a template. That was a template that was used for a few teams. But what we saw, and really I guess the saturation point was, I would argue, around 2016. If you look at Euro 2016 and the kits at Euro 2016, Nike particularly were really, really kind of homogenous. Like almost all their kits for the different nations, England, France, etc., were the same template. But the real kind of critical thing was not so much that it was a template in itself, but it was the way the template had very little variation. There was very little bespoke elements. So what we saw, and this was, of course, well, many people know that there was a big kind of statement from Nike actually very recently, which basically said, we're going to move away from that kind of approach of a template which has almost no bespoke details for various teams. And the funny thing is, it's not necessarily as big a change as many people would think. What they're really saying is, it's just those little variations. It's giving clubs and federations the options for different colours, for different kind of places where they can use patterns, simple things like having bespoke colourways and things like that. And very quickly, with those little variations in different areas of the kits, things like crest placement, things like all those types of areas, you get a set of kits which actually are sort of variations on the theme. So they are bespoke in many ways, but at the same time, they're not working from the ground up each time, because of course that would be impractical and not make sense from a business perspective, from a cost perspective. But we're getting a lot more individuality, which is really good. I think basically it's a win-win for all parties, for fans, like you're saying there, they can, you know, feel more pride in the fact that their kit doesn't look the same as their rivals or someone else in their league. And I think for the brands as well, obviously it's good for them to have that kind of brand kudos, if you like. So yeah, I think that's actually been really exciting to see.
And are there any particular kits this season that you're most looking forward to seeing on a pitch? Whenever I see kits launched, my first thought is, I want to see that on a player running around a football pitch, you know, so you can see it in context. And there's often subtle design details and subtle colour application that it's only when you see it on a human body that you can really appreciate. I mean, I'm really into Barcelona's kits of the new season. I'm a big black and gold fan.
So
I'm looking forward to seeing that being worn by the team. Are there any kits that spring to mind that you're most looking forward to? Oh, actually, sorry to jump in as well. Tottenham's third kit, the yellow with the centered badge. I love that kit. Like the simple type sponsor, the centered Tottenham badge. It's just such a beautiful, clean kit for me.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a good shout. And I think probably of Nike's third kits as a collection, I think definitely that one is one of the better ones as well for me. And it's funny because that as a collection again is, I think, probably didn't land as hot as previous years for kind of fans in general. But I think actually when you do look at it, and I think a lot of them will age quite well. I think, you know, it's probably not as kind of obviously exciting as last year. I think last year was, I would say, particularly popular, particularly because you had those kind of retro influences. And I think a lot of fans could gravitate to that quite easily. Whereas this year, going down the kind of trainer-inspired route, I think is not as clear of a link for a lot of fans. You know, and understandably, I think a few people saying, oh, you know, what does this have to do with football kind of thing? And Nike themselves, their press release sort of said, oh, this is inspired by fans wearing, you know, Air Maxes on the terraces. People saying, is that really a thing? You know, but anyway, I think design-wise, there is a lot to like there. But this year, I think you kind of bring up a really good point, actually, that sometimes, and I'm, you know, like anyone else, I'll judge a kit based on its release and based on, you know, like the photos that you get and the collateral that you get from the release. But it's only when you see it on the pitch and you see it with, you know, the shorts particularly and those kind of, often the shorts kind of balance the kit out. And actually sometimes, and I was aware of this actually at the weekend when United wore their third kit against Villa, I think it was, and they wore black shorts with the kit. And I believe going into the season, it's going to be white shorts, I think is the plan.
I do know that so the shorts and the socks are available for fans with the pattern applied to them.
Ah, yes, yeah.
But I do know, I'm not sure whether it's going to be black or white myself. I just know that the players' shorts and socks for that kit are a block colour.
Yes. And in that, so when I saw a picture of the kit, because I think for me, the shirt, I appreciate it, but I wasn't too keen on it. But when I saw it with the black shorts, for me, it kind of elevated the shirt. It felt much more balanced and it felt kind of almost like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see a bit more of the direction Adidas were going down. So yeah, I think it's a really key thing. And some of my favorites this year, that there's been a few teams or kits that have stood out. And one of them was a kit earlier in the year from the States, from a team called Forward Madison. And they're a team, I think a few people will be familiar with them because they're one of a number of teams in the US, outside of MLS, outside of the top division. But they're really active on social, and they've really embraced kind of the kit culture side of things. So they, the kit's working with Hummel over in the US, and Hummel as a manufacturer are one of my favorites, but they produce bespoke kits, and the team they have there that design the kits are really creative. And their kit this year, I can't remember if it's the home away or third, but they released a kit earlier this year, which was, I can't remember the name of the technique. I think it was oil dripping, or it was basically some sort of oil paint related technique to create these wonderful patterns. And their color scheme is this kind of pink and blue color scheme. And so their kit, Forward Madison, over in the States, they are, their kits are absolutely amazing. I'm very, very keen to get a hold of one of them this year. Another team as well, which I really like, are Red Star FC out of Paris. And
yes,
I think many people, many people will be familiar. They're a team actually for a long time, have had a bit of a culture around them, and the history of the club is really interesting as well. Anyway, they their kits this year with Adidas, fascinating design. They're kind of really kind of gone out there. I believe they're working with a studio actually from London. I can't think of the name of it now. Is it Acid? We Are Acid or Acid FC or something? I'll have to get the name of it. But a creative studio out of London. And anyway, their kits, Red Star FC's kits this year, both home and away, really, really interesting. So there's a lot of kits out there. And for me, I always kind of, I like to pick up one or two at the start of the year, but then wait and bide my time and try and get a few bargains during the year as well.
Yeah. The Forward Madison Club crest is utterly sensational. I'm just looking at it right now.
Yes.
It is so beautiful. And now you said it, I do recognise having seen their kit from this year. So if anyone wants to go to forwardmadisonfc.com, I do now remember seeing that kit briefly. And it's not the kind of kit you'd forget easily. But striking for sure. Absolutely. one of the videos in your Phil's Corner channel, one of the videos I enjoyed most myself was the Umbro's the Umbro's kits in Brazil. Mm. I have a wee soft spot for South American kits. Some of the favorite kits in my collection are South American kits. Can you talk us through generally what you find to be different in kit design approaches from, say, Europe to South America, or what is it that so often seems to be unique about South American kits?
Hmm. Yeah, so it's quite funny. One of the things which I think of first when I think of South American kits is actually an excessive number of sponsors, and it's funny because I think a lot of people they think, oh, you know, and I see it every year, you know, you get people posting about a shirt and think, oh, you know, look at this, you know, this kit ruined by kind of 12 sponsors. But I kind of look at it and go, that's just brilliant, you know. Again, it's not necessarily aesthetically pleasing, and you know, I wouldn't want that across the board, across world football. But I guess that in many ways embodies one of the elements which I think makes South American kits kind of almost otherworldly. There's sort of something which you wouldn't see in Europe, and you know, given the restrictions now that are in place, it just wouldn't be possible. But that's one thing I think of. But not just that, I think going back to when we were talking about teams' identities and kind of how kits can so often embody so much about a team. I think South America just has so many teams which, for various reasons, not just kits, but I think crests as well. And I think there's sort of a almost like a purity, I guess, in terms of like when you think about football and things we love about football. I think, I don't know, talking about like classic players and things like that. So often South America is a place where yeah, you'll unearth these kind of gems of players that will be playing for these South American teams, and they'll go on to have storied careers in Europe. But it's often in South America, of course, where they're from, where I guess it's that kind of romantic side of the game where it feels like, I guess it's that times 10 often in South America.
Yeah.
So there's so much around that. You know, I mean, just as I'm speaking, I'm just thinking about, you know, thinking like about like Boca Juniors. We could talk about Boca Juniors. In fact, I should have mentioned Boca Juniors when I was thinking about teams and kids. That I'll add them alongside the team in Dortmund, I think. But yes, yeah, so I think this is so much about that the game in South America in general, which is really romantic and beautiful. So I think the kits naturally are kind of an overflow of that. And again, there's so many teams I could list.
Sao Paulo,
yeah. I love the Corinthians crest. So yeah, go on.
Yeah. And there's the Fluminense colours.
Oh yeah. Yes, yeah. Amazing.
Well, and talking of the additional sponsors that you find on South American kits, so the Boca Juniors, the shirt from the 100 years, from I think it was the 2005 kit, I remember right.
Yep.
And it has Goodyear on either of the sleeves, and it's a really good example of how sponsor logos can fit and be as kind of visually satisfying a part of the aesthetic as any other part of the shirt itself.
Yeah, and it's funny actually, because when sleeve sponsorship came into the Premier League, you saw a real contrast where some clubs did a much better job at incorporating them. Like you say, the Goodyear one's a really good example. Then there were others, like I can't remember who Norwich was sponsored by, but I think it was some sort of app, and it was a really hilarious kind of logo with a little monster, and then it looked like they basically just, you know, plonked the logo on there, and it almost worked because the colours, but it was also really funny to see the contrast between them and some of the other teams.
When it comes to Premier League shirt sleeve sponsors, I can't help but think of Angry Birds and Everton.
Yes.
That's what comes to mind, and I'm sure I even heard a rumour at one point that Tinder were being spoken of as a United sleeve sponsor.
Oh yeah.
Thought, wow,
yeah, I heard that.
Really?
As well, yeah.
And you have also spoken extensively on crest design. So touching on that area, what for you constitutes a well-designed crest?
That's a good question. I think similar to kits, but perhaps more so with crests. I think individuality is a huge one, and it's something which I've commented on a few times, and many people actually have commented on how a lot of crests, and for various reasons, some of it practical, and I think also, just the kind of trend of crest design and the rebrands that we're seeing a lot of recently. A lot of them you just couldn't really pick out from the crowd, you know. There's, and I don't have anything necessarily against the kind of round crest approach, but what we've seen a lot of is not simply just round crest, but round crest with a very similar font and very similar kind of approaches to the elements within that those crests. And I think really what I wouldn't want to see, and I don't think we're quite at this point yet, but the danger would be if we go even further down that road, you miss out on, like you mentioned, Ford Madison, that crest there. It would have been very easy, I'm sure, for them to go down the simple round badge approach. And I guess, you know, to use City as an example there. And they actually had that sort of crest in their history, so I don't particularly mind that. But if Ford Madison had gone down that route, you just miss out a little bit. And it's not necessarily drastically different, but it's just those, it is the shapes, it's the elements, it's the typeface choices. And I think a lot of clubs, understandably, and especially a lot of English clubs, when you've got those kind of, you know, heraldic kind of really intricate crests, which most teams have up and down the Football League, in an effort to sort of move into the digital age and, you know, have a crest that looks really good when it's a lot smaller and on Twitter and things like that. Yeah, a lot of clubs go down the kind of really kind of, I guess, yeah, the classic round approach. But the thing which I would want to see and I wouldn't want to miss is just that individuality. It's things like I mentioned, the Corinthians crest, where you've got these kind of, the anchors are there and there's this, yeah, all these little elements. And I love that. I think, you know, don't get me wrong, some crests are going to look similar and that's fine, but I wouldn't want to lose all those. And again, they're often quite busy. I don't think necessarily those crests look good, you know, when they're scaled down. But I think really what I'd want to see is clubs maintain those kind of more interesting crests and then look at alternate crests and things like that if they were to, you know, use them in digital applications and things like that. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff, and I hope we didn't lose that in crests.
If I was to put you on the spot right now and tell you that after we chat today, you get a phone call from a football club that says, Phil, we need your help next season. We feel we need a complete new identity. If there was one club in the world whose crest you would love to rework, and it doesn't have to necessarily be one whose crest you don't like, but one that you would love to get your hands into.
Oh, yeah. That's a great question, because I think when I think about the teams I'd love to work with, and obviously I'm very much projecting many years down the line, but it would be an ambition to work with clubs. But I think, yeah, most of them actually have really good crests already, I think, you know. Yeah. So it's a tough one. I mean, certainly, and I guess similar to what we said before, there's definitely clubs which I'd love to work with in various ways, and teams like Fiorentina do jump out. I mean, you know, when I think about their crest, I don't even know if I would change anything, but at the same time, I guess it would be fun to work with a team like that and think about how could you tweak or use what's already very good and maybe just tweak it and make it that little extra 10% better. Apart from them, I mean, another team actually, in fact, yeah, maybe Valencia are a team which I really have a lot of fondness for. And I think they, again, I really like their crest, but I feel like that's one which could potentially do with a little bit of, a few tweaks. I mean, probably my favourite Spanish team in terms of not just kits, but I've always had a fondness for them. And I love the elements there. You've got the bat, of course. You've got the flag, the red and yellow, which runs through. Yeah, so that crest has a lot of good tools. So yeah, maybe Valencia. We'll go with them.
And is there a particular reason for your fondness for Valencia?
Yeah, so they were really, I guess, growing up, going back to sort of something before, I've always, I mean, almost pretty much every league I've sort of, I guess, just sort of softly picked a team to kind of follow. And Valencia were that team for me in Spain. And they were that combination of, so in the noughties, and when I got into football in the noughties, so this was kind of just after their European success in the very early noughties. But this, you know, when I think of kind of the Rafa Benitez managed team, yeah, and I'm actually a Liverpool fan as well, so there's a bit of a connection there, yeah. But just the players, you know, that Valencia had such an incredible team. And I could probably name most of the starting 11, I reckon. Not that I should put myself on the spot like that, but, you know, from Canizares in goal, and he had Ayala at the back as well. He was a great defender. And then further forward, of course, players like Aymar, Vicente, of course, David Villa when he was there.
Yeah.
You know,
Gaisca Mendieta, what a player.
Exactly, Mendieta. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't even mentioned Mendieta. You know, and of course, a lot
Canizares
of players went on.
A great goalkeeper as well, just jumping in.
Yeah. There. Yeah, yeah, proper cult figure between the sticks. And, you know, even players like, you know, David Silva and Juan Mata. And, yeah, just so kind of, I guess, that combination of a production line, really, of talent with a lot of kits which I really admire, and not necessarily the most interesting kits, but I think, you know, I'm a big fan of Nike, and certainly the Total 90 era, even though, again, the kits were relatively kind of similar across many teams. I used to love the Valencia kits there. And yeah, even things like the crest, and I guess visually, and they're one of those teams I've always sort of always look forward to seeing what they'll do every year. So yeah, they're one of a few teams like that for me.
Fantastic. And when it comes to football boots, do you have the same kind of interest in football boot design?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, it's definitely not been nearly as much as Kurt's, and I think probably related particularly to the fact that I didn't necessarily play a lot. I never bought or had many boots kind of growing up, and but having said that, and I think linked to my interest in Nike, I'd always kind of had an eye on particularly Nike, but also Adidas as well. And I always used to be really interested in things like, you know, the ads that they would run. And, you know, I'd very much look to kind of the 90s and the noughties as the kind of golden era of TV ads from Nike and Adidas. There's so many famous kind of examples, right from the airport ad in the 90s to the stuff that both Nike and Adidas would do. And of course, the boots so often were the key thing of that. So I'm going to think about like the Predators, of course, and what Adidas have done and now doing again with those. And I always, and many people remember the Total 90 boots. And for me, when I was at school, everyone had a pair of Total 90s, even if it was the kind of the takedown versions, the cheap versions, everyone had those. And, you know, so I think for me, it's always been kind of a distant appreciation. But certainly when I worked at Footy as well, footy.com, we were talking a lot more about boots then. So during that time, I rediscovered a lot of what was going on in the boot world. And I'm really interested in it, despite not owning many boots myself, or kind of, I wouldn't ever claim to be an expert. But yeah, definitely an appreciation. And there's a lot of kind of, when I look back, there's a few boots I can think of actually, which do stand out over the years.
Ah, very good. And looking ahead to the future, is there anything particular that you would like to see kit manufacturers do, or is there any particular development or any way of kit design developing that you would like to see happen?
I think for me, a big part of what I'd love to see more of is brands, I think, just telling the story and engaging with people in a very authentic way when it comes to kits. Because I think one of the things which has happened quite a lot and hasn't been particularly good is that you see a lot of kits, particularly some of the more kind of out there kits, more the disruptive designs that we talked about. A lot of the time you sort of see, well, I think two things often happen. One of them is that a brand comes out and they basically say, oh, you know, this design is inspired by X, Y, and Z, you know, and often those influences could be really tenuous, and you kind of feel like, well, maybe you just created it because it looks cool, you know. And I think I'd almost like to see brands just kind of own that a bit and just sort of say, you know what, yeah, we're doing this because we think it's good. But I think also on the flip side, I want brands to be a bit more open sometimes about what's gone into the kit. And I think actually, you know, a lot of brands would do well to sort of actually, again, open up a bit more of that process. And I'm not saying they would necessarily kind of give, you know, access all areas to the design rooms, but like, I'd love to see more brands actually showing, you know what, this kit, which, you know, someone will say, oh, I could have done that in an evening. You know, this has actually taken, you know, months and months. And of course, next year's kits are already probably being finalized, or at least, you know, from a design perspective, they're already quite advanced at this stage now. We're only just kicking off the season.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, of course some kits, you know, are going to be less intensive than others, but I think I'd love to see more brands embrace that side of the game. Because I think they, I don't know, but I would like to think that a lot of brands would start to realize that there's a huge audience for, you know, for this sort of stuff. And kits, of course, you know, there's always going to be people that don't really care what the kits look like. They just want to buy their team's kits, and that's great. But I'd love to see more, and we've not seen it a lot really, of brands really owning that area and telling the stories, showing, you know, speaking firsthand to the designers that are designing the kits, and for them to really kind of, you know, openly kind of talk about what this is. And I think that'd be really exciting. I think we're probably quite close to that. You know, I think we're seeing little snippets of bits of that. But yeah, I think to see that would be really exciting. I think it'd be really positive.
On that, along that line, I did read last week a really good article by Carl Anker in The Athletic he spoke to, sorry, the gentleman's name escapes me, but someone very influential in the design process at Adidas, and they spoke about the new United third kit. And it was interesting hearing him talk about all the testing that goes into kit design. So, you know, having individuals wear it and then testing how it looks, how it performs, how how the aesthetics move with someone wearing the kit itself, and all of that side of thing is super insightful.
Yeah, it's exactly things like that, because I think a lot of the time as well, and we mentioned before, of course, a lot of kit design is quite subjective, and I think, you know, it's impossible to please everyone. You know, you could, and if you're trying to do that, you're going down the wrong route. But yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for, it's that authenticity. It's kind of saying, you know, we won't necessarily convince you that this kit is great, but this is our thinking. And this is like the kind of, you know, it's not just like, oh, we're just going to do this. You know, I think people often have this kind of view that kit design is very much a kind of, almost a kind of like a random process. You sort of, you know, okay, what are we going to do this year? We're going to do this. Yeah. Great. And it's like, hang on a bit. I mean, and also, this is one thing I often tell people, is that sometimes a club is just a lot more, you know, they want to stick to tradition a lot more. Or sometimes, you know, it's not the brands that are actually making or moving the needle as much. It's actually the club or the country saying, no, we want to stick to our guns. And so, to use a quick example, England, for example, you know, a lot of their kits, or, you know, particularly their home kits from kind of recent years, are very, very plain. And then people say, well, how comes Nigeria get a kit like they have? And then England have a kit like they do. And it's not just Nike kind of saying, oh, you know, we're going to give England the plain white kit. You know, a lot of time it's the federation sort of saying, oh, actually, for various reasons, be it their own opinion or market research, I don't know what it would be, but they would say, yeah, you know, we want to go down this route. So I think there's all those elements at play. And I think the more it's opened up, where appropriate, of course, I think it would be really, really positive.
Fantastic. So Phil, can you remind people where they can find you online?
Yeah, so Twitter is probably the best place. So it's Phil Delves, just my name on Twitter. From there, you'll be able to see different things. So Football Shirt Collective, which I really would recommend if you are into shirts, you know, do follow them on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And as I say, much of my work is through there. And then from Twitter as well, you'll also see a link to my YouTube channel. And actually this week as well, I'm going to be starting a Patreon as well. So I'm going to be producing more content for people that are into that. So yeah, so there's lots of stuff going on. And I love chatting about shirts. If you know, I'm really happy to talk about anything related to kits, and love kind of meeting new collectors and shirt fans. So yeah, there's lots of places to chat there.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, Phil, thank you very much for your time today. And it's been incredibly insightful for myself and with what I like to think is a little wee collection that's growing. You've given me every insight I need to let it grow even more. So thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure, Marcus. And I will say actually briefly that it's a real privilege to talk to yourself. You know, I actually looked at a cover letter I'd written before my job application to Fritti.com, and I'd referenced both yourself and Phil Galloway and a few other people in the space of kind of creatives that I really admired who were working in the space. So it's quite surreal really to be chatting to someone like yourself. So it's a real pleasure, and big fan of what you do, so keep
that's very kind. Thank you very much. Pleasure's all mine as well. Brilliant, Phil. Thank you for your time.
That's all, mate.
Thanks, Phil.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.